This free program is paid for by the listeners of WBAI New York. If you're not already a member, think about joining us to help keep free speech alive. This free program is paid for by the listeners of WBAI New York. If you're not already a member, think about joining us to help keep free speech alive.
Hi, listeners, a special event presented by the New York Society for Ethical Culture. Obama and the Future of the Imperial Presidency. Panelists include Elizabeth Holtzman, Louis Lapham, and Michael Ratner. It's free Wednesday, March 25th at 7 p.m. The New York Society for Ethical Culture, 2 West 64th Street in Manhattan. Again, Wednesday, March 25th, 7 p.m., Obama and the Future of the Imperial Presidency. For more information, go to www.nysec.org.
Come out on the streets Thursday, March 19th, to protest the 60th.
All right. Yes. Well, we'll find out about that protesting information in a moment. Well, quite a moment. It's time for Sugar in My Bowl. My name is Joyce Jones, and let's start this off the way we should. Okay.
I want a little sweetness down in my soul. I could stand some loving, oh, so bad. I feel so funny, I feel so sad. I want a little steam on my clothes. Up so they'll go. What's the matter, Daddy? Come on, save my soul. I need some sugar in my bowl. I ain't fooling. I want some sugar in my bowl. So they'll go. What's the matter, Daddy? Come on, save my soul. I want some sugar in my bowl. I ain't fooling. I want some sugar. Thank you.
Do 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 is Jerry Allen, piano. Thank you.
la la da la da 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 la 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 la
And you're listening to WBAI in New York, 99.5 FM. Yeah. That was Miss Betty Carter. And let's see what we got going on here.
Oh, wait a minute.
Okay. Yeah, I can't hear properly. And you're listening to WBAI in New York, 99.5 FM. Sugar in My Bowl is the name of this program. My name's Joyce Jones. And what we just heard, I have guests in the studio, and we'll get to them in a moment. But just to let you know what you've just heard, it was the title cut from a live recording with Miss Betty Carter, Feed the Fire, which was also written by our guest, okay, our guest is Jerry Allen. Miss Jerry Allen, composer, pianist, arranger, professor, and much more. We'll talk to her and our guest co-host, Farrah Jasmine Griffin, in a moment. And that was a live recording from the Royal Festival Hall in London, released in 1993. Before that, we heard, let's see, I think I'm going to mess up here, Melchizedek, okay, and that was from Miss Allen's most recent recording, Timeless Portraits and Dreams, released in 2006, and that was Miss Jerry Allen with the Atlanta Jazz Chorus, directed by Dwight Andrews. Actually, let me back up. I didn't let you know who was on Feed the Fire. That was Jack DeJohnette on drums and Dave Holland on bass. And, of course, Miss Jerry Allen on piano. And on Timeless Portraits and Dreams, let's see. Now, is everybody who's listed here on every recording?
No.
Okay. but that was with the Atlanta Jazz Chorus, and the director of the Atlanta Jazz Chorus is Dwight Andrews. This was from Timeless Portraits and Dreams. And just so you know, some of the artists that are on this release, it's Ron Carter on bass, Jimmy Cobb on drums, and Wallace Roney on trumpet. And Wallace Roney is someone very special to you, isn't he? Miss Allen? Oh, okay. He's a good trumpeter. That's who he is. And let's see. We have Donald Walden on tenor sax. And that's on some recordings. And you can find this recording. It's on the Telarc label, Telarc Jazz label. And let's see. Before that, we heard I Want a Little Sugar in My Bowl, which is the theme for this show, Sugar in My Bowl, by Nina Simone. This particular recording was from a compilation, Sugar in My Bowl, The Very Best of Nina Simone, released in 1998. And right now I'd like to welcome Ms. Jerry Allen and Ms. Farrah Jasmine Griffin.
Hello.
Hello. And thank you for joining us this evening. Thank you for joining Sugar in My Bowl.
Thank you.
And we were having this great conversation while we were listening to the set, and for starters, tell me about your experience with Betty Carter. since we ended with Feel the Fire. What was that like for you?
Well, I first met Betty in Pittsburgh. I was studying at the university, and she came in town to do a concert, and her piano player did not show up for the sound check. So somebody said that I could do the sound check for her, and she said, well, come up here. And so I did, and she did her sound check, and I really was excited to have a chance to be that close to her. And then the next day, she did a panel, and she invited me to sit on the panel. It was about women's concerns in jazz, and I was honored that she invited me. And then after that, I think through the years, I guess after I actually came to New York, I guess that would have been another 2 years or so, she ended up being such a real bridge for me into the community of musicians there because of her endorsement. And I ended up doing a record with her, Dropping Things, and did some duo concerts with her. And she managed me for a number of years. That's how I met Ora Harris.
Yes, I noticed you had the same management.
Mm-hmm. It was Bet Carr Productions at the time. And Ora, you know, and I still remain great friends. And she's been my stability through this very unstable business. And I ended up doing this record with Betty, and she said that she wanted to name the record Feed the Fire. And I was like, wow, wee, that's amazing. And we were on tour with Jack and Dave and recorded throughout the tour. And this particular concert was the one that the company chose to represent the you know, the tour we'd done together.
Oh, okay.
It was a thrill working with her. She was a grand diva.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, she controlled each room that we played in, no matter how big or how small. You heard the people, you know, clapping as, you know, the music started. She was walking out on the stage. And she would just, you know, take people into her arms. By the end of the concert, everybody was smiling, and, you know, that's what she said was the test as to whether you had done a good performance. Excuse me. As to whether the people were smiling at you or not.
Mm.
She said another way to tell would be the staff. If the staff were angry and walking around, you know that you hadn't done a good job. Mm. If they were smiling and happy, and you know they had gotten good tips, then you had done a good job. So, but she was a great artist and a very fearless artist. She would try things that like giant steps, you know, things that you have to hear those intervals before you can sing them. You know, or certain instruments, you have to hear the note first before you can put it out there.
Mm-hmm.
Piano, you know, is more direct. I mean, I know mathematically what's going to work.
Mm.
Doesn't always work because the X factor remains. But with the voice, you have to hear those notes first. Mm. And with pieces like that, that really is risky.
Mm.
To get out there and do something that advanced. And she was doing that. You know, we were out there doing very challenging music. And she was jumping out there and, as you could hear, keeping everybody on their toes.
Sure.
So, plus working with Jack and Dave, of course, was a thrill.
Mm-hmm.
What did you, I mean, I'm sure there were many things you learned from her, but if you had to think about what you learned both musically and also in terms of leading a band, what would you say you got from Betty Carter?
Well, she was a very fair-spirited person. She would be hard on you, but she was hard on everybody. So it was a question of the music. That was really the, if the music was being served, then she was having fun. If it was something going wrong, then she wasn't going to hang out in that wrong space. You know, she was not going to be in that. It was like, you're going to get it together now, or, you know, somebody's not going to be here, and I'm going to be here. You know, and that was really great training ground for musicians. It was great. She wasn't the only one that was like that. I mean, any of the major band leaders at the time, the expectation was very high. I mean, Art Blakey's bands, you know, that expectation was very high, and he would embarrass you on the bandstand as well. So it was just a question of, I think, a different time. I'm not sure what shifted, but I think young musicians had to come through bands to prove themselves. And it was a very high level of competition to get in those bands because, you know, there were a certain amount of seats in the band, and then everybody wanted that. So when you got in there, you had to really be ready to be in there, and then you had to maintain it because there were always other people in the wings waiting for that chair, you know, if something would go wrong. But I also think, people were willing to accept the master's wrath, so to speak, to have the honor of being there. And I think it feels to me as though, you know, those times are, it's not that way so much anymore.
I was just going to ask you about that because it, when I met you, that was one thing I really wanted to discuss with you. You were with Farah at Columbia University, and you had taught a series of master classes and workshops, and then you performed. And that was something that seemed to be, well, something I've noted as well, that the clubs, you know, the bands, the leaders that have young people in their bands or just have that opportunity to do that, it seemed as though the only opportunity to teach someone was in the college. Is that something?
You mean today?
Yes, today.
Oh, today.
Excuse me,
yeah,
yes.
Yeah.
Well, I think the question of culture comes up, you know, and how we learn music. And we've always learned music through the culture. It's always been like your responsibility to get into the spaces where the music was. In other words, you went to where the music was, and you were happy to do that because you wanted to learn. So I think because the music is so much in the university now, there's a lot of discussions just about the idea of culture remaining a focal point of how we learn, and having, you know, the young musicians being aware of the history and the culture and that produced the music, and the fact that, you know, it comes from a very serious experience, a group of people, very intense series of experiences, and music evolved to where it is today. And I think that we have to continue to make sure that people understand that and embrace that. And by doing so, they will stay connected to the roots of the culture and, you know, to the musicians who are responsible for the music evolving. So music and culture, I think, have to stay the focal point in terms of how we learn in the universities.
I also noticed in the universities, as far as how music is taught, and it depends on who it is, I guess, it's almost as though there are certain types of artists that are focused on, or certain periods in that artist's development, like, say, Miles Davis, for instance. Farah, you had written a book about Miles Davis and John Coltrane. And both Miles Davis and John Coltrane had gone through transitions, and I noticed with your music, Jerry Allen, that you've you expand. You're not limited to a particular type. You expand and you grow, as most musicians do. But from what I understand in universities, there's a small focus on the development of the artist. It's like you can learn Dixieland. You know, as far as jazz is concerned, there's Dixieland, or there's this period up to 1966, and anything that happened in the 70s is not jazz. So is that...
sounds like a movie I saw. Yeah, I was going to say, it sounds more like film than film I saw.
So that doesn't happen in the universities. There's definitely more...
I think it depends on where I'm sure. Well, you're in the university.
Well, right.
Yeah, I'd like
right?
to hear your comment.
So I think it certainly depends on where you are and who's teaching. I mean, that it's likely that, you know, I think it's not just university. It's the kind of institutionalization of the music mm-hmm. in different ways that forces a kind of more narrow conception of it. When we know that this music is so expansive, and you pick any one of those artists mm-hmm. and to try to pin them down to any one given period is just really a travesty. So Jerry's teaching in the university, I can't imagine that your students would be limited to any one particular.
No.
Yeah.
And I think, again, I'm at Michigan, University mm-hmm. of Michigan. Mm-hmm. We have... A very, you know, keen interest, and I have to say I have a group of piano students that are really exciting. I'm watching them advance, and they're advancing based on the same criteria that, you know, jazz musicians have advanced, you know, advanced on since the beginning of the music, which is the acknowledgement of the ones that came before and the study of that. And, you know, through transcription and analysis and really learning those solos and dissecting what those great artists did as a roadmap to how learn how to play. Mm. And they're also going after, you know, trying to hear the music as much as they can in live settings. The same thing, right. It's very clear roadmap to how you learn to play the music. And I think as long as you, for me, I've seen my students really grow under that same criteria that, you know, that I learned under, that people that I learned from learned under. And I don't know if I'm answering your question, mm-hmm. but, you know, I really do feel that jazz is alive and well, and I hear some really brilliant students. We were just talking about a master class I did at Columbia.
Right.
And these students are, you know, very fine players mm-hmm. at very young ages. So, I mean, I think they understand that process is about doing it the way Sonny Rollins did it,
mm-hmm.
doing it the way Miles Davis did it, doing it the way Mary Lou Williams did it, you know. And kind of that's the way I teach.
I'm actually glad you mentioned Mary Lou Williams. And I know you're Farrah, there's something you're...
No, I hear this lush light
in know.
The background.
I saw
so
you
beautiful.
Pick up the CD.
Yeah.
As I pick up your copy, shall I say. Mary Lou Williams, is there something that you'd like to do or have done with her music?
Well, we recorded her Zodiac Suite.
Okay.
Under the umbrella of the Mary Lou Williams Collective.
Okay.
And we're hoping to record her masses and some of the other unrecorded works through Father O'Brien and the Mary Lou Williams Foundation, mm-hmm. who, you know, continue to get her music out there to young people mm-hmm. and to, you know, she's got a great big band music mm-hmm. that we're trying to get around to universities so that... these young people can hear this music that was very modern then, and it still sounds really fresh and modern now. And it's very wonderful writing music she wrote for Benny Goodman's band and Andy Kirk, and you know, Duke Ellington used the Scorpio as one of his mainstays in his book. And so there's a lot more music we're trying to get out there to colleges and high schools.
Okay.
And also hopefully to get some of these other masses recorded as well.
Now, you had mentioned a recording, of Mary Lou Williams' music that you're trying to get out. Is there a scheduled release for that? Or
I hope you'll let me come back when...
Okay,
but you did do the Zodiac Suite.
We have recorded the Zodiac Suite. Mm-hmm. That's been out for 2 years now.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, and that's still available.
Okay.
If you go to the website, it's a wonderful body of work that she had recorded, and we were fortunate enough through, again, Follow O'Brien and finding these documents of her compositions I went and transcribed just to listen back through again and to match the scores that I had and just to fill in some of the blanks in terms of things that were not all in the score with the music of her performance of it, and with Buster Williams, and we had Billy Hart, and we had Andrew Cyril and Andy Bay.
Oh, okay.
These great musicians come together to record the Zodiac, and there's another part of it, a second release that we're looking forward to doing.
Oh, okay.
We did the whole Zodiac, but we also did some other, Andy Bay did St. Martin de Porres and Medi Medi, one of her pieces, Busy, 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 some things, I think Miss Dee Dee. And so hopefully that'll be out, I'm not sure when, but in the next year or so, I'm hoping that... Follow Brian's talking about putting that one out as well.
Now, website. What is the website?
The Mary Lou Williams Foundation.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Just look it up. Just look it up.
Did you... you came to New York after she had passed away, so you never had a chance to meet her or interact with her, did you, with Mary Lou?
No, but I did get to hear her play in Washington when I was at Howard.
Mm-hmm.
But I, having gone to Pittsburgh, had a lot of opportunities through the musicians there that had stories about her and loved her very much. I did some research on her starting in those years, and that's how I connected with Father O'Brien.
What was it that drew you to her music in particular? I mean, especially, both as a player and as a composer, what was it that you found challenging or attractive about her music?
Well, her playing... very virtuosic independence between the right and left hands, and her ability to span the whole history of the piano. I'm still in awe of that. And there are, there's a video of her teaching a history class that she taught at Duke, and her playing. She was able to demonstrate every era of the piano. And as I'm listening to her, I'm now teaching a history class as well. It's very interesting to me, and maybe it's just because I'm a piano player, but you hear the piano in so many different aspects of how rhythm kind of developed throughout the music, from ragtime on up to the modern shift. The piano became less left hand, and that no longer using the left hand, and the bass really taking over much of that that whole role the piano played. But it just seems to have been a pivotal instrument in terms of just the structure of the rhythm throughout the history of the music, and you can really hear that in her as you're listening to her command of all of those different eras.
All right. Well, you're listening to WBAI in New York, 99.5 FM, Sugar My Bowl. We're having a wonderful conversation with Jerry Allen and my special, extra special co-host, Farrah Jasmine Griffin. And gosh, I feel so bad talking over this wonderful music. This is from The Life of a Song, That was recorded by Jerry Allen. But I just, it's so comfy. Oh, by the way, the Mary Lou Williams site is www.marylouwilliamsfoundation.org. www.marylouwilliamsfoundation.org. And yes, you can find out about the Zodiac Suite Revisited, which we were just discussing. So, let's see.
Well, Jerry, you played in a lot of different... I mean, you were talking about Mary Lou Williams being able to span this long history of the music and the piano. But, I mean, you've played in so many different kinds of settings and different kinds of, you know, with different kinds of musicians. And, you know, I think it's hard to categorize you. I mean, you're straight ahead. You're doing stuff that's more out. How do you select the kinds of settings that you want to play in? Like, you know, is it there are people that you want to work with? There's a particular kind of music that you're hearing at any given time. How do you make those decisions, those aesthetic decisions?
Well, as a musician in coming into New York in the 80s, I was working with Mary Wilson, and she was my stabilizer.
Now, this is Mary Wilson from the Supremes?
Yes.
Okay. Just to make clear.
Detroit Mary Wilson from the Supremes.
Uh-huh. Your homegirl, Mary Wilson from the Supremes.
Okay.
So that was a great, really great gig to have. You know, coming into New York, really not having made any major connections as of yet. I have to back up. When I first came here, it was really Dwight Andrews, our good friend, who introduced me to Oliver Lake, who was a major, very important bridge for me to New York. And he was doing his jump up band at the time. So I came in and I did that record date with him, which was very wonderful to come into New York that way. Mm-hmm. And after that, I didn't work again for some time. Mm-hmm. And I realized that that was maybe not a realistic way to see life, coming in with such a great opportunity right away. But Mary Wilson was needing a piano player at the time, and so I worked with her for about 6 months after I had moved to New York. And I started getting calls after that from, you know, musicians like Arthur Blight, and I got calls from Lester Bowie, and, you know, and they were calls that were sustainable. I mean, I was going to be able to work enough to sustain myself. So I gave Mary Wilson my, how do you say?
Notice.
My notice. And I thanked her for, you know, all the great lessons and how to do makeup and letting me wear the sequins tops and ride in the limo with them. And oh, it was really wonderful. And play those songs and sing the backup, you know, all those songs, Love Bug, and oh, I love those songs.
And you got to sing.
Yeah.
Actually, I was just going to ask whether you ever sang.
Yeah, I sang backup with the Supremes, honey. Yes. So that was a great experience, but I really came to New York to be a jazz musician, and I you know, I could have continued working with Mary, which was really stable because she was always working. But I'm very fortunate to have had enough sustainable work through those really wonderful musicians. Mm-hmm. And that was my beginnings of, you know, being here. Mm-hmm. So throughout, you know, those early years, I was just grateful to, you know, I was just grateful to work. Mm-hmm. And coming up in Detroit, Marcus Belgrave and those wonderful musicians like Donald Walden, and it was always clear that if you were working as a musician, you were very fortunate, and that you needed to be versatile. So I was trying to do every kind of gig that was making itself available to me at the time. And, you know, you learn something from each of these different settings. And I think that they all inform your journey, you know, in some kind of way. So I wasn't really selecting at that time. I was waiting to be chosen. And grateful when the calls came in. And it wasn't until, I guess, later in the later 80s that I started to try to do more things as a leader myself. We did a concert at the Greenwich House, and I paid for the house. And I tried to, you know, I think it was E.L. James. He was an actor that co-produced the concert with me. And, you know, we paid the musicians minimal fee, and they played my music, and that was my first band gig as a leader in New York.
Yeah, and when was that? When was that
event? Oh, you know, 80, maybe 86, something like that. 87.
Wow. Actually, how did you wind up playing piano? Period. How did you wind up playing piano? Did you?
I was attracted to it from having seen it on young people's concerts. And I just really, I don't know, I was drawn to the instrument. I remember the television show. It was Leonard Bernstein.
Yes.
And I don't know, I can't remember the piece. I was really young, so I don't remember what the piece was. But it was just the way it looked and the sound of it. I knew from that, you know, that was an instrument I wanted to study. And my parents were really very supportive, and they went out and got a piano.
Wow.
And my brother and I took piano lessons.
Mm.
At the time, I mean, a lot of people had pianos in the house, so it was, you know, it wasn't something that you would see often in my neighborhood. But it was a big expense, and I was very, very grateful to have the lessons in, you know, what else?
Was there a lot of jazz in the house, or what was your journey to playing jazz?
Well, you're right. There was a lot of jazz in the house because of my father, mm-hmm. who is a huge fan of the music today still. Charlie Parker is his favorite. And
actually, all three of us, our fathers brought us to jazz.
Oh, interesting.
Yes.
Yeah. Wow.
Very interesting.
Yes. We have to share the story then. I want to hear your versions, too. Yeah, but my dad talked a lot about Charlie Parker, and he took a friend, he said, to see Billy Eckstein, and he said he would never take a girl to see Billy Eckstein again. He said that was one of the worst mistakes he'd ever made. But, you know, he had great records. He had Sarah Vaughan and Milt Jackson and Duke Ellington, and the way that these people looked on the covers. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was just, you know, it drew you in. And then, of course, you know, the music was in the house all the time. Mm-hmm. So that's really, he's really the one that is responsible for my love in the music.
Well, I want to take a little music break. Just let everyone know they're listening to WBAI in New York, 99.5 FM. This is Sugar in My Bowl. I'm on with Miss Jerry Allen and my extra special guest co-host, Farrah Jasmine Griffin. And let's listen to some more Jerry Allen.
Into tomorrow's world, let joy and love run free, and hope replace the memory of times when grief and strife were part of a world. Of painfully unfulfilled dreams, let's hold on to our dreams. to tomorrow's world. Bridges transporting us to tomorrow. Dreams, floating streams, water purifies and makes a bridge to transport us to a new tomorrow. In a world where joy and love run free, let's hold on to our dreams. Dreams are floating streams.
Thank you.
Okay, I just realized that I made a mistake as I'm sitting up here chatting and having a great time. There's a song that I really wanted to play. And I'm going to play it right now because I love Bobby Hutcherson. But this is the reason why I put the CD in the player. Thank you.
my baby's gone away. Went to, she didn't say. Now what am I gonna do? Cause I just can't hide my foolish pride. Baby, I'm still in love with you. Why don't you drop a line? Tell me you're doing fine. My days are oh so blue. Baby, I'm still in love with you. Why did you leave? Why make me grieve? Am I to suffer this way? Will I ever breathe a sigh? Please, please, darling, won't you try to believe me when I say I was wrong? Dark shadows haunting me, nothing but misery. I can't escape, it's so true. Cause I just can't hide my foolish pride. Baby, I'm still in love with you. In love with you. To suffer this way. Please, darling, won't you try? Will I ever breathe a sigh? Please believe me when I say I was wrong. Dark shadows haunting me. Nothing but misery. I can't escape, it's so true. Cause I just can't hide my foolish pride. Baby, I'm still in love with you. I'm still, I'm still.
meadows of my heart. High up in the sky, the little stars climb. Thank you.
And you're listening to WBAI in New York, 99.5 FM. And my name's Joyce Jones, and you're listening to Sugar in My Bowl. My guest, special guest tonight is Miss Jerry Allen. And my extra special co-host for the evening is Farrah Jasmine Griffin. And I have to confess, I don't know if I mentioned it, but when I was introduced to Jerry Allen at Columbia, when Miss Allen was doing the workshops, there was a special concert, and Farrah Jasmine Griffin was had a discussion with Miss Allen, and that was my introduction. Well, reintroduction. I had first stumbled upon Jerry Allen at the Charlie Parker Jazz Festival. And in doing the research for this, it's as though I've been under a rock somewhere, which is probably how everybody else is feeling right now. A lot of other people are feeling. I can't say everybody. But I know that it was, I felt like as I was doing the research, where have I been? Why don't I know of Jerry Allen more? And I'm just grateful I know now. So,
I think I feel like I've been a Jerry Allen junkie for a long time, and I can credit a very good friend of mine who was writing an article about the group M-Bass, and I would come down to New York from New Haven and hang out with him, and we'd go to the kind of collective performances, and then we go to the individual performances of different people. And I remember the first time I heard Jerry by herself was at this little club somewhere in the village. I didn't know New York very well at the time, but just sitting there, and you might have been playing, maybe you were playing with the trio. I don't remember there being very many people on stage with you, but that would have been like 1988, maybe, something like that. I can remember the apartment I was living in. I remember the apartment I left to come hear Jerry Allen. And I've been a fan ever since, you know, just collecting the music, anything, the individual recordings with you as a leader, the stuff that you did with, like what we're listening to with Betty Carter and other people. And it's just been such a great growth experience when you follow an artist. Mm. And, you know, listen to them evolve and grow and change, and you know, we were talking earlier, not limit people to any one way of being, but grow with them.
Right.
And so it's really been an extraordinary experience doing that. And then who know, I get to know her too on top of it. So it's a real treat, real treat.
Well, it's my good fortune to know you, mm-hmm. Farrah. And she's such an important scholar of the music and part of a really important group of really brilliant people who are talking about the music in the way that it deserves to be talked about, and giving us another level of accuracy we haven't really necessarily had access to. So it's my pleasure to know you and to be a witness to this time, because it's a shift happening, and I think it's, you know, really important for us to just kind of watch it, because we're watching history unfolding.
And we've had some, you know, it's just been fun talking with Jerry about it and chances to collaborate, share ideas and things. So it's really to love an artist and her music, and then get the opportunity to work with her is wonderful. You're going to be doing some, we have some things to look forward to, right? We've been listening to Jerry, but we have some things to look forward to. You've got a CD coming out in the fall, maybe?
Right, we have a new CD coming out on Motima Records, which is a soul piano work called Refractions. And it's a commission. It was forged by a commission from the Guggenheim Foundation. And Farah has been good enough to do the liner notes and for the project. Mm-hmm. So I'm very excited about that. And next year we'll be touring the piece. And Carrie Mae Weems, the great photographer, is also going to be collaborating. So I feel like it's a really intense, you know, woman power record.
How perfect for March.
Well, you're so good at collaborating with different kinds of people. I know that the last few times I've seen you, you've been working with this phenomenal young dancer, Maurice Chestnut, right? And I wanted to know if you could just tell us, and it's not the first time you've worked with the dancer. You've worked with the tap dancer before, haven't you? So how did you decide that that was something you wanted to incorporate into the music?
Well, again, Detroit, my roots in Detroit, I think a lot of things always go back to that. And coming up in Detroit, people were still dancing to bebop when I was laying in the clubs. And so that was exciting to see people get up and move to that music. And there were a group of dancers called the Sultans, tap dancers there. And Lloyd Story was one of those artists. And I just remember him being willing to perform on one of my records. And that would have been in 86, I believe, a record called In the Middle that we did. And he tapped on it. And at that moment, you know, I mean, I had done some dancing as a younger, you know, as a kid, and I was doing tap dancing, but I really understood tap to be like percussion, you know, and the dance itself, you know, has a real parallel motion with the evolution of it's really jazz. It's the same lineage. It's the same rhythm and attitude and, you know, the lope. It's all the same music. And I met this young dancer through my daughter, who was taking some classes at Sharon Miller's in Montclair. And I said, well, this would really be, this is something I have wanted to do live for a long time. I even had a band called Timeline that I took to Europe about 5-6 years ago. But at the time, I couldn't get my agent to visualize the idea of a tap dancer, you know, as a part of the band. But we went anyway and did the, you know, we did the tour with the group without the tap dancer. So I've been really trying to make this happen for a long time, for people to see it as a, you know, not a necessarily like he's a show, you know, not band and show. It's really, he's integrated into the music as a percussionist. So we call him Tap Percussionist. That's how he's listed everywhere. And this young man, my drummer, Casa Overall.
I was just going to ask you about him.
The two of them together, it's really like watching, you're talking about how Mary Lou spans that whole legacy. Well, these kids, Casa's like us in the sense that his parents were the ones who turned him on to jazz. Mm. So he's a baby that heard the music from the womb as well. Mm. And when he plays like that. You know, he has that old spirit in his playing and that feeling and that touch. And so they can go from that all the way to hip-hop,
yes,
and back in a seamless way. So it's really exciting and fun.
And that was demonstrated at the Schomburg. It was definitely, it was wonderful.
If any of your listeners haven't seen us, they'd be on the lookout for it, because it is just, you know, and the audience just so appreciates it. You know, it's just a really great experience to hear that.
And I'd just like to acknowledge, as we're talking about this, Miss Jessie Norman, who we were all saying how much we would love to be at her performance this evening. But she liked him when she heard him at the Vanguard with us, which was the first time the tap had ever been in the Vanguard.
Wow.
And the proprietor, Lorraine Gordon, really, really loved him. Yeah. And it was, I think, a moment that was really great timing for him, because he performed with in the honors performance last week at St. John's.
So the series of performances that Jessie Norman is curating, she used him.
That's wonderful.
So Jerry Allen is responsible for tapping the Vanguard.
Yes.
And for it being part of this great series that the Jessie Norman. You did something for that series too recently, right?
Right. We were a part of the opening night with both the Ron Carter, Terrence Blanchard's group, and James Carter's group as well.
Nice.
Very nice.
Yeah.
So in the background, we're listening to, this is from the Farrah Jasmine Griffin pile of Jerry Allen recordings. Yes. This is from The Gathering.
And this is another artist who performed in Miss Norman's honors. This is Vernon Reed, who's a good old friend back from, we were talking about M-Base, but the Black Rock Coalition.
Oh, yes, definitely. And it's Living Color.
That's right. Yeah. And he was on that performance as well. Really, they just tore it up.
Mm.
So we were talking about hopefully doing something together again in the near future. So I thought, it'd be nice to take a listen to what we did how many years ago now.
Oh, goodness, what was it, 98? I was talking to someone earlier about this recording.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to be really busy. You are busy. You're constantly busy.
I'm very grateful.
Exactly. It's a wonderful thing.
I get to hear you a lot. I mean, the good thing about being in New York is that we get to hear Jerry.
Yes.
And I was saying, when we were listening to the Andy Bay piece, you were talking about the difficulty of playing as slowly. And then we heard you with Betty Carter, and I said, well, you're playing slowly like that. And, could you talk a little bit about what you think about playing at that tempo and its relationship to the blues? You were talking about that a little bit while we were off the air.
Oh, well, hearing Andy Bay and his mastership, it's a very special talent, excuse me, that what he has as a vocalist, as an artist, is just very unusual. And you hear Ray Charles would call the tempo off like that, or Betty Carter would call the tempo off like that, and hear Andy Bay, you know, and just a lot of space to trip up and fall and say something stupid or whatever. So it's just mastership to hear, you know, the blues, and to feel that connection to, you know, the roots of the music in that kind of way, just personified in such a modern and just fresh way, you know. It just never, it ceases to be fresh when it's done with that kind of mastership.
So are you going to be in town performing any... I mean, you were just here last week, so it was so you're going to be here next week?
Well, not in town, but in Michigan, at University of Michigan, there's Donald Walden Week is being celebrated in Michigan. Donald is one of the really important saxophonist from Detroit and a great, great artisan. We just lost him 2 years ago. But the school is celebrating him, and Barry Harris will be there. So that's where I'll be.
Wonderful.
Next week.
Excellent. Good. So is there anything we should listen to take us away? Any Jerry Allen that you think you'd like to hear?
Well, wow, you know.
We have everything.
So you can pick from the Farrah Jasmine Griffin pile of Jerry Allen.
Right, or the Joyce Jones pile. Right.
I have the pile of artists that Jerry Allen worked with or really likes. But
well, I'm open. Do you have that Vernon Reed up there?
Maybe. Well, we're listening to a little bit of it
now. Oh, he's on there now? Okay.
Yeah. Is there a particular cut on here that we want? Actually, is there a website that you have?
Oh, I have. Well, yes, people can go to jerryallen.com.
Okay.
And actually,
that's GERIALLEN. Mm-hmm. JerryAllen.com.
I don't know if you would want to play the. I was just meant. Oh, you have it there.
That'll
How
help.
About I Have a Dream, which is you can get a listen to Donna Walden on that, and then Professor George Shirley, the operatic tenor, is on this as well.
Okay. So
along with the chorus from Atlanta, Dwight Andrews' chorus.
Excellent. Well, thank you, Jerry Allen, for
thank
visiting WBAI. And Farrah Jasmine Griffin, welcome back.
Thank you. Thank you for Sugar in My Bowl.
It's a great show.
A great show.
Thank you. Yeah. You make it great. And this is indeed Sugar in My Bowl on WBAI in New York, 99.5 FM. And we're going to go out on, let's see, where are you? I Have a Dream. Stay tuned.
I didn't
come on
that
now. Come on now. Okay, let's try this again. Boy, oh boy. All right. Where was it? All right. Got a little excited in here. And this is what I'm supposed to be doing.
Mountain top, let freedom ring. Be sure.
indeed listening to WBAI in New York, 99.5 FM, just to let anyone know that if you are interested in the recordings that were played this evening and you'd like a playlist, you can email me at sugar, S-U-G-A, in my bowl, at gmail.com. That's sugar in my bowl, S-U-G-A, in my bowl, at gmail.com. And let's see, this was one something that I wanted to play. From Evolution of the Groove. It's a posthumous Miles Davis recording. Carlos Santana's on it. And our guest of this evening, Jerry Allen. So let's take a listen to that. We'll be right back. All right, everyone. You're listening to the closing moments of Sugar My Bowl. My name's Joyce Jones, and this the featured special, extra special, majorly important artist for the evening is Jeri Allen. She was our guest for the evening. And our extra special co-host is Farrah Jasmine Griffin. And right now we're listening to From the Gathering, Ray, and the acoustic guitarist that I was bantering over was Vernon Reed. And right now I'm bantering over Jeri Allen, but I just wanted everyone to know that if you are interested in a playlist, you can email me at sugarinmybowl, S-U-G-A, in my bowl, at gmail.com, sugarinmybowl at gmail.com. And before this, we had heard from, it's a posthumous Miles Davis recording, Evolution of the Groove. It was an EP. Carlos Santana was featured on that recording, and Jeri Allen was playing Fender Rhodes. It's about that time, and the EP is titled Evolution of Groove. It was released in 2007, and let's see, what did we do before that? We were listening to Dropping Things. Gosh, if there's something in between that, I'm going to have to check the archives for it, and I will let you know what you were listening to. Ah, yes, Mary Lou Williams. Yes, we heard... here we go. I Have a Dream, and that's by Mary Lou Williams. And it was on Jeri Allen's Timeless Portraits and Dreams, which was released in 2006 on the Telarc label. You can get this anywhere, everywhere, and you should look anywhere and everywhere for every recording that you could find of Jeri Allen. Because if you're like me, you've got a lot to learn. And this is just the artist to learn from. If you want to learn how to be a musician, if you want to learn how to compose, if you want to learn how to grow as an artist, whatever that art is, Jeri Allen is the best background music for it. Best example to have. And let's see, before that we heard Stardust, Memories of You, Dropping Things, and it's released in 1990, recorded at the Bottom Line. Let's see, before that we heard Pretty Girl, Star-Crossed Lovers, Andy Bay, Shades of Bay, 1998. Where is that news, by the way? Yeah, I'm looking around here trying to find the evening news. Oh, there it is, okay. And, prepare yourself for a rebroadcast of the WBAI Evening News. There are so many recordings that I wanted to play that I had, which were few, and many from the Farrah Jasmine Griffin pile were yet to be sampled. So, you've got to go out there and find Jeri Allen. This is WBAI in New York. 99.5 FM, Sugar My Bowl. I'll be back next, the third Monday of the month. So in April, I will be back. It will be the 20th. And I think I'm doing a Lady Blues thing. But yeah, that's the plan. Stay tuned for a rebroadcast of the WBAI Evening News.
Streets Thursday, March 19th, to protest the 6th anniversary of the shock and awe attack on Iraq. Demand an immediate end to the occupation now. 1 million Iraqis have been killed, along with over 4,000 U.S. troops, and 5 million Iraqis are in exile from their homes. Don't let your voice be silent now. Demand an immediate halt to endless wars for empire, no matter who is president. Leave school and work to join World Can't Wait and many other New York City activists at a rally on Thursday, March 19th at Union Square, 14th Street and Broadway. Music by Rebel Diaz and more. Then we will take our voices to the streets on a march to Times Square Recruitment Center and converge at 5 p.m. at 43rd and Broadway. For more information, go to worldcantwait.org or call 866-973-4463. Be there to say, not one more day, not one more death.
You're listening to WBAI in New York, 99.5 FM. I am trying to find out, what the heck is this? It's on this computer somewhere. All right, that must be it right there. No, I don't know what that is. I know what it is. It's my fault. It's Mary Lou. It's from Mary Lou Williams' website. Stay tuned for a rebroadcast of the evening news. Actually, she did. Mary Lou Williams had to have the last word. Let's listen to some more information before we get to the evening news.
Thursday, March 19th, is the sixth anniversary of the criminal U.S. invasion of Iraq. But the U.S. has been at war with Iraq for 18 years. This Thursday, March 19th at 7 p.m., hear Barbara Nimri-Aziz, author of the powerful eyewitness account, Swimming Up the Tigris, about the long siege of Iraq. Hear how the Palestine Right to Return Coalition on the blockade of Gaza today. Salute continuing resistance. That's Thursday, 7 p.m. at 55 West 17th Street, 5th floor in Manhattan. Sponsored by International Action Center and Al Alda. Call 212-633-6646. See you Thursday, 7 p.m. at 55 West 17th Street.
This is Phil Donahue. I have 600 channels in my home, but 400 of them are selling the Bowflex machine. That's why I listen to WBAI New York.
Good evening. In the news tonight, mayors from across the country gather in Washington to discuss how they can benefit from federal stimulus funds. The Obama administration has dropped the term enemy combatant for Guantanamo detainees, but still asserts the authority to hold them without charges. And there are calls for an investigation of the corporations that generate electric power for price fixing. With these and other stories, I'm Andrea Sears in New York.
Please remember that this program is supported by the listener members of WBAI New York. If you like what you hear, please consider becoming a member of WBAI or renewing if you've already joined. Basic membership is $25, but we accept any amount. Help us keep free speech alive.